Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Regiment, the Early Doors podcast with him,
Phil Neely, that's me,
and me, Ben Steele. How are you today, Phil?
I'm all right. I wish I was there. Yes, I'm good. I was doing a workshop yesterday in Kirby, West Kirby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could have done with somebody to translate what they were saying a lot of the time. Hey, mate, what about that thing? You know, it's all that. They all sound like they've got... Well, I hope this is to my our friends in Merseyside. I say this affectionately, but they sound like they've got like sore throats. They're like, right. Like that. You know what I mean? But it was great. They were really good. It was at a grammar school as well. Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. So they were all like proper on it. So there we good. Go. Yeah. So it's good.
Excellent. Well, as people probably have seen from the episode title, we have another special guest today. And that means, Phil, one of your favourite things, when I have to try and think of an analogy for this character.
Oh, yeah.
So this week, we have, I like to call, the little finger of the grapes, because Ken was wrapped around it for all episodes. So today, please welcome Susan, Tanya, can you watch the bar, love, Cookson.
Hey!
To the regiment.
I wish you was. Hey, Cookie, you all right?
I'm all right, Cockle. How are you?
I'm very well, yeah. I'm good, yeah. Yeah.
How what are you, think? Ben?
I'm all right, thanks. Yes. Good. Surviving. Is that what they say?
Yeah. Soulflower, I was just asking before, so you're Emmerdale star now, aren't you?
Emmerdale, da-da-da-da. It sounds a bit like the start of a $6 million man, that, I always say.
Oh, it does. We can rebuild it. Yeah, that was his eye, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember that. I liked the Bionic Woman, me. Yeah, she was great. Can I remember it, Leslie something, Rug? I'm sure somebody else will correct me on it. But yeah, she were good.
Lindsay Wagner. That was her name, wasn't it? I can't remember what the character's
Wagner,
name.
Wagner. Something Wagner.
Lindsay Wagner.
Lindsay that Wagner.
That was her name, yeah.
Yeah. Totally believable. Hey, these days, you know, they can do that.
Hey, she could smash a tennis ball in her right hand, couldn't she?
She could. Yeah. She'd be no good at Wimbledon, would she? And them strawberries would just be a mush in that hand of hers.
She'd be anyway, Coggy, yeah,
so Emmerdale, well, it used to be Emmerdale Farm.
Yeah. There's not a lot of farm work going on. There's a lot of affairs. There's a few murders. We've just had a horrible car crash. That resulted in us losing Heath Hope.
Just a story of an everyday Yorkshire village, then.
Absolutely, yeah. You want to see what that postcode is and maybe avoid it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I've actually driven down the road, because I was in Emmerdale for a bit. I only did about four. It's like, you know, usual. They get me in for like 3 or 4 episodes, realise I'm crap, and then that's it. I never go back.
When did you do Emmerdale? Was it while I've been in it?
No. What do you think I'd do? Avoid you? Don't tell Cookie I'm here, will you? She'll be all over me. no, it was about 8, 9, yeah. I played like a CID guy who was, there was some kind of, can't even remember his name, some young kid that was that bad, can't remember his name. Anyway, I was in it for about 4 episodes and then, but it was nice. I went in the wool pack, so that was my claim to fame.
I was a detective in it several years ago as well. I've been in it. This is the third time I've been in it. I started off as a petrol attendant, taking Kim Tate's credit cards off her. And then I went back for several episodes playing a detective. I think she was called Judy Dove from above. Right. and now I went back in it 4.5 years ago, something like that, as Wendy Posner, the nurse. Yeah.
So what's it like working there? Is it a nice cast and all that? I mean, obviously you're not going to start slagging people off, but I mean, you know, is it a good place to work? Is it everybody kind of?
It really is. I put it up there with Early Doors. It is fair. There's no kind of hierarchy. Everybody just gets on, shared dressing rooms, and it's, you know, there's never a sense of it's cast and then crew. We're all there working for the same means to make as good a program as we can. Everybody, from the cleaners to the catering, you do feel like you're part of a family. I was really so pleasantly surprised when I joined. I remember Jess Taylor, who is now, she was head of makeup when I joined, and she's now producer. Happy Valley, and she's just done... what's it called with Michelle Keegan? Fill Me Once. She produced that.
Yeah.
And I remember my first scene was at the village outside the wool pack, accosting poor old Victoria Sugden. And I turn, I'm like waiting for, you know, the nod for me to move into this shot. And I turn and Jess was there. And I've known Jess for years anyway, my mum. And I said, what are you doing here? And she said, I've come to keep an eye on you. I want to make sure you're all right and everyone's looking after you. And that's what it's like. We all, when, you know, new people come in, we all make an effort to, you know, you get a buddy. But by and large, everybody just wants to make sure you're okay. And
can you remember, you were kind of mainly responsible for this, but can you remember when people used to come on set, new people on Early Doors? Can you remember what used to happen? Can you remember? We'd all used to burst out in, consider yourself at home, consider yourself. Like all the cast, we'd be sat around and then somebody new would come on. And then, you know, it was like a new accident. I mean, we didn't, to be honest with you, didn't have many new people coming in. We were all pretty close-knit, weren't we? But if anybody new started. I mean, I've said on these podcasts before that after the scenes would break, loads of time, you know, in any other things, you know, you go off and get a coffee. But loads of time, we would just sit on set, wouldn't we?
Just stay there. Well, what was it like when we finished filming at 7? I know you and Cashy used to have to go and work on the script for the next day. You'd go and take an hour or so, but still working.
Yeah.
We would go, do you remember when the Rovers, what had been on the Coronation Street Experience?
Yeah, it was a working...
So we used to go in there, we'd finish in the bonded warehouse, walk 10 yards, go in the Coronation Street Rovers. We'd be in there for a couple of hours waiting for you and Cache. Then we'd go up to the Grapes next to the Opera House, which was Liz Dawn's pub.
Yeah.
We'd be in there till closing. And then all the cast, barring you and Cache, we were all in like serviced apartments, weren't we?
Yes.
No bar there.
Yeah.
So then we'd all come along with you in Cache. You were staying in the V&A at the back of Granada. And then we'd be in the bar till...
God knows what time. I know. It was madness, wasn't it?
Could not be parted from each other.
I know,
Seriously, it was like we'd just... And then we'd be back on set at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I know. You're back in makeup at like, it would be like in makeup at like 6:30, 6:00, 7:00. Yes. Everyone, we should have been sponsored by Barocca, really, shouldn't we? Because everyone was
could not be separated.
Yeah.
And I, because we did, we filmed Monday to Friday, didn't we?
Yeah.
And there was a part of me that when we, you know, we shouted, "Cut, that's a wrap on a Friday night," I was sad. I was genuinely sad.
Yeah.
I've got 2 days without these people.
Oh, no. It was a proper kind of full on. I mean, weirdly, because it's the first thing I'd done in telly. And I thought, oh, everything must be like this. Isn't it brilliant?
No.
I've never been on anything as good for, you know, as far as, well, to be honest with you, you know, it was great. The whole thing was great. But as far as being a part of like a family or being part of a group of people, everybody, it's like a gang at school, isn't it, really? It's like you find a like people. Mm. And it was great. And we were quite cliquey, really. I think when I look back, I think to myself, we were a bit, you know, if anybody sort of tried to sort of break in and there was a bit of that going on.
But you know what? I this isn't blowing smoke up anybody's derriere. I think that has to go down to the casting.
Yeah.
And the work that you and Cashy put in on doing the casting and choose it. And it is very rare, I think, when you get a group of people that come together that already, I think, have certain things in common. It's like the bedrock. It's just there. And that, from the working class kind of background. And so there's no explaining it. There's no having to kind of research it. It's in your bones.
To be honest, I mean, because Craig had worked on, and it's really, you know, a lot of, I remember him explaining it to me, because he, with the Royal Family, obviously they'd done that and they'd had a really good laugh on that. And when we were casting for Early Doors, because I'm pretty sure your name came forward via, we'd seen you, because you did Clocking Off, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I remember Nicola Schindler was executive producer.
Right.
And I think she was one of the ones who was saying, Cookie's great and Lisa, and she was helping us with it, and Craig was always what they like and I was like, well, does, you know what are you asking that for? He said, it's honest to God, he said, you're in each other's pockets.
Yes.
And so when you got the script, then you must get, you know, your agent saying, oh, somebody's asked about this. Do you want to have a look at the script and all that? And talk me through it, because it's funny, because I like listening. I mean, I ask the same thing of Lisa, really, because I don't know any of this. It's just interesting for me to think, like, when you got it, how you got it, how you come to get, you know, wind of it and then, you know, ended up at the audition, really.
Yeah, it starts usually with a phone call from the agent saying, oh, there's been an availability check done on you for, there's this comedy series starting. It's so many episodes. It's one of the, you know, it's one of the kind of main parts, and it's ensemble. and it's set in Manchester, in a pub in Manchester. So you're like, all right, okay. yeah, I'm up for that, yeah. So I'll send a script. And those were the days when a script literally came through the post. Now it's all email.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. It's a real, because it's like a gift for an actor when that it comes through the letterbox. Invariably now it's torn to bit, the packaging's sort of a bit ripped and what have you. But I remember that script arriving. I think it must have been the first episode. And I read it from cover to cover, and it was like eating your favourite biscuits. I couldn't get them in my mouth quick enough, because they were it was so every single word, it was like, I've lived this, I know these people. It was like I knew it. It was like I already knew it. I just devoured that first script. And my husband, I remembered, you know, saying to him, I have to have this job. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I'm going to audition for it. I'll learn it. I'll do the very best that I can. But and he's like, you know, he was always, the glass was half full. And he's like, well, why are you talking like you're not going to get it? I said, yeah, but what if I don't? You, you know, this is amazing. This is absolutely top right. You just know. You know, I'm not a writer, but as an actor, the flow of it, the ease of it, it was utterly joyous. And then, you know, went for the audition, met you and Cashy, and was so nervous, so incredibly nervous. But within minutes, it was like we were just pals. It was And I'll never. Do you know what? I think I was sent all the scripts because I was sent all the scripts because the story in the last episode of the first series, the big boy.
Oh, yeah, with Melanie and her dad and all that.
Yeah, but the big boy, Dino.
Yeah.
I remember reading it. I remember starting to read it and I thought, how come other people are referring to like these men's holidays as the big boy's Beano? And then, so we started talking about it, you know, Craig was sort of saying, where did you grow up? And talking about my family and all the rest of it. So then I eventually mentioned about, I said, I love the stuff you've written about the big boy's Beano. I said, because it reminds me of when I was little. I said, maybe, certainly once, but sometimes twice a year, there'd be a weekend where you get halfway through the Saturday and I think, where's my dad? I remember saying to my mum, it happened once or maybe twice a year for a few years. And you get to the point, I'd say to my mum, I said, where's my dad? And she'd go, oh, he's pissed off on his big boy's Beano, aren't he?
Yeah.
And when I read it, it was like, so this was a thing. This is what men used to do. And I said, can you imagine? I said, me dad would bugger off for like 2-3 days to the Isle of Man. That's where they'd go. It was always the Isle of Man. And leave me mum at home with six kids.
Yeah.
he did miss a beat. He went, I know, Susan. He said, but they were the good old days.
Yeah, when men were men and women were vegetables. Men. Happy day.
I was just going to say it's just on so many levels. It wasn't just about my character, it was all the characters on so many levels. The recognition of real people and real lives and how they interacted and what you accepted. You just like, I'm just talking shy.
Yeah, I can remember. And it's really funny this, because we did this with Lorraine as well when we auditioned Lorraine. And I know we definitely did this with you, because I mean, me and Craig have been mates since we were teenagers. So we kind of got a bit of a sense of what, you know, he'd look at me and I'd look at him and, you know, we'd like, no, oh, yeah, she's pretty good. Yeah, this is good. So we kind of keep you talking. And it wasn't something... Now, looking back on it, it wasn't as premeditated as that. It's just something that we kind of, I think we just fell into doing it. And I remember and one of the things, I mean, just talk about Lorraine for a minute. Originally, Lorraine was going to be, I don't think I've mentioned this actually before, but with Eddie and John, they were meant to, she was going to be almost silent, hardly say a word.
Right.
In fact, so much so that when we auditioned her, I think we gave her some of Eddie's stuff about the traffic lights and this.
I think you're right.
Just because
we
didn't
told me this.
Yeah, but just because we didn't have much dialogue for her. But then when we started talking to her afterwards, she was like, "Oh yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I really like it because you know." And then blah, blah, blah. And we were like, "Oh man, we need to write some stuff for her, don't we?" And that was, you know, and
you remember the bit where she starts telling the story and Eddie goes, "Oh, can I tell him this, John?" She goes, "No, you can't, Eddie.
No, you can't, Eddie." Righto. And he just takes it. But the same with you. I mean, remember with like, you know, we're obviously looking, he's thinking, "Oh yeah," and then. And you talking, and I remember, I'm sure you mentioned the we were talking about old characters, and you mentioned Tommy Todd.
Oh yeah.
So remind me about it, because it was
where I used to. He's only around the corner from where I live now in Sheffield, and it was a few doors down from me, and there was a guy called Tom Todd.
Yeah.
And he didn't mess with Tom. I mean, he was a lot younger than our Tommy.
Yeah.
But you didn't mess with him. Yeah. I mean, you really didn't mess with him. But yeah. If he was on your side, you were all right. I mean, really, because when we first moved into this house, it had been a student house. We had loads of work to do on it. And then the house next door was rented for a while, and that had students in it.
Yeah.
I remember one night there was a park, because this in Nether Edge where I live, it used to be a big student place. A lot of the houses were multiple occupancy, but it's all kind of gone into the, you know, it's all custom-built accommodation now in the city centre. But so there was a lot of student houses on our road, two of which were owned by the university. Anyway, this one particular night, and I think we had Rory, he was only a baby, and this party kicked off next door. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was the noise. They had the windows open, speakers in, music going, different music on different levels of the house. It's like a three-story house. Anyway, it got to about 11:30. And, you know, Tom was, he liked to drink.
Yeah.
And he could be a bit noisy when he wanted to be. Yeah. But he came up the road and he just stood at the front door and he was like, because the windows were open. And I won't go into the expletives that came out. But it was like, if you don't get that music turned off.
Yeah.
It wasn't down. It was get it turned off.
Yeah.
So it went down for a bit. And then, you know, we're in our house thinking, oh, thank God, you know, we've got Tommy Todd on the road. anyway, about 20 minutes later, of course, it just goes up twice as loud. And the next thing we were aware of was he came marching back up the road. So this was probably after midnight. He kicked the door in. He went in. Wherever the main sound system was, he pulled the plug out the wall, took the sound system. He literally just picked it up and took it out. And then I don't know if there was a bit more noise after that, but he ended up putting a window in as well. And then the police came and he got arrested. But the music stopped. That was good. And then the next day he came back up the road and he boarded the window up for him and was like, really sorry. But if he'd had a few or he'd had a bit of, you know, we didn't want to mess with him. So yeah, I remember having that conversation and just saying, oh, we've got a Tommy on the road, he's called Tommy Todd.
Yeah, no, I remember you telling us about, because I remember we were sort of saying, we've got a Tommy on, and we were talking about the police, I think, and saying, you know, oh yeah, the police, you know, and saying something like the police in ours, they would know the local sort of hard men, yeah, and just sort of leave them to it a little bit, really, because they knew they were sort of doing their job for them.
When we first moved to the house, there was an old, like, it was a Triumph, it was like a vintage car up on bricks outside the house that we'd bought. Yeah. And we'd been assured by the woman we were buying it from that it was all in hand, and by the day we moved in, the car would be gone. So we're moving in, we've got a massive lorry with all our goods in, reversing up this little road, and there's the car still on bricks outside the house. Anyway, cut a long story short, we're having to carry stuff in round this car that's parked outside our house. And it turns out it was his car. And he'd done some work for this woman who we bought the house off, and she wasn't happy with it and wouldn't pay him. So he was like, right, okay, I'll show you. And she came out one morning and the car was there up on bricks outside her house. And he said, that's not going till I get paid.
Wow.
And eventually we had to get the police, but I was bricking it then. Once I started to hear the story, I'm thinking, oh my God, what trouble have we inherited now? And he ran, at that time, he also ran the little greengrocers down the road. Anyway, we ended up having to get the police involved, and they just went and had a word with him. And the next morning, we came out and the car was gone.
that's the thing, isn't it, about, you know, when you were saying, like, reading the scripts, it's like recognising those sort of the characters that...
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, when we wrote it, we wrote it about people that we knew, or not necessarily, you know, a photo identical people of all the, you know, they weren't based on individual people, just a conglomeration of things that of people that we knew. But and one of the things was like in the first series, I think you were just, well, it was, we'd had this idea but we didn't sort of flesh it out in the first series that because the landlord was single, that he would have some kind of a love interest at some point. So did you get a sense of that in that first series or not?
Not initially, because I remember if you look now, you look at the first episode, and Lisa, when we first come into the bar, I look as rough as old boots.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew who I'd based Tanya on.
Right, yeah.
And her and Debbie were close mates and, you know, life and soul. But again, I think the sort of people that if you cross them, and I know plenty of those people.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the path that I was going down. And I remember you and Cashy, we were in the V&A, and I remember the two of you having a chat. We'd not long since got into filming that first episode and then started talking to me about, you know, do you think that she's somebody who... Because even in that first episode, there's a bit where me and Lisa are sat at the bar and we're eyeing Ken up.
Yeah,
Remember her like, oh, look at him, nice and clean.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, nice and clean.
Yeah, nice and clean. And well, I'll give your bell a little ring.
Yeah, and all that business.
So there's all that kind of flirting going on. And then I did kind of rethink, once the possibility was broached of, you know, do you think Tanya and Ken could possibly have a relationship? And then I started to think, well, she's probably had quite a rough life. And then I started thinking, he's the life and soul, Ken.
Yeah.
That community revolve around that, you know, that pub. What would they do without that pub? And he's there. If you need him, he's there.
Yeah.
I started thinking she probably has a rough time of it.
Yeah.
And I then started thinking she's on her own. You know, there was all the story about her husband's died.
Yeah.
He died. Oh, she's got in. She came back and he dropped dead in the conservatory. Oh, she's got a conservatory.
No, it's awful, isn't it?
Just absolutely joyous.
Great.
But I started thinking, I bet he was a bit of a tosser, her husband. And I reckon he had a bit of money.
Yeah.
I thought he's been a bit of a tosser, and I bet he's knocked her about a bit.
Yeah.
And so for me, I thought it's that connection of she's seen in Ken a really good bloke, somebody who...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, somebody who's a sort of decent guy, really. Like,
The way he is with Melanie. You know, just looking at the way he is with his daughter.
Yeah.
You know he's deep down, he's a really good bloke.
Yeah. That's funny. I
pitched it.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because that's a sad... I'm a sort of, you know, in real life, I'm talking to a friend of mine. And he was saying his ex used to be jealous of his relationship with his daughter. And I was like, God, you know, I said, I would imagine that a lot of women would think that was fantastic because they see how you are and how respectful and how lovely you are with your daughter, that they would think, oh, well, really nice, what a good bloke, you know, what a nice, you know, because there's something to be said for that. And that's why I remember we were thinking, well, you know, because obviously you're younger than Ken and, you know, but we didn't hide away from that fact. I'm not sure John.
No, it was that subject matter was raised on several occasions.
Yeah, yeah. You remind me of them two in the films. Remember that a lot, like Kirk Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. No, Esmeralda and that fella that rings the bell. It's awful, really. You know, I sometimes think and think it's so cruel, but, you know. But, Ben, you must be gagging to ask them. Ben has, like, lists of questions that never gets
asked. Fell asleep.
No, I'm still here. To be honest, my questions I had, you've kind of generally gone to them. So how did early doors come on your radar, the audition process? I was going to ask, who did you... Did you play Tanya in a certain way, as in the friendship with the girls and the John side of it, as in like, is it not a split personality? That sounds wrong. But was it based on two people for those type of areas?
I always kind of thought, you know, deep down at heart, Tanya's a good woman. She's got good heart. She, but I kind of feel that about all the people in that pub. Yeah. They're all really good souls. That's why that's the connection between them.
Yeah.
They'd help each other out if, well, they do, you know, with the telephone bill, all of that.
Yeah.
I think it was a bit, it was kind of playing the coyness and the flirting with Ken without knowing full well that as other people in the pub see what's going on, you know you're going to have the mick taken out of you.
Yeah.
So there was an element of, you know, she'd be a particular way with Debbie to how she would be with Ken. But there's that lovely scene in the toilet when they were in a big wreck.
Yeah.
She's breaking her heart, you know, he don't give a toss about me and blah blah. John comes out, you be cool.
Yeah.
And I, you know, but I'm like, I'm trying to raise the tears and everything, you know, all emotional about Ken and, you know, he don't care about me. She comes out of the cubicle, just making room for the buffet.
But I remember, like, I seem to remember that scene. I remember there's quite a few times you guys were like corpsing in there because, you know, because it was, you know.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's so emotional like that.
It was a small space, wasn't it? It was a confined space.
Yeah. Well, we'd never, to be honest, we were made that, didn't we? Because we didn't have a theme. We didn't have a ladies' toilet.
No.
So we made for that scene. I think it was just that scene. There was a scene when Debbie and what was she called?
Ricardo.
Because
she wants to get off with Eamon with TikTok.
And she was giving, after a few gins, and they said, oh, he's gone from cesspit to Brad Pitt, hasn't he? Is that, you know, she didn't like him at first, but he brought her a few gins. A few gins, he's gone from cesspit to Brad Pitt. I remember that. And then, I seem to remember. Because me and Craig would like write a load of stuff. We'd always overwrite things and then go, oh, no, that's too much. No, that's too much. You know, we can't have that. But yeah, I'm sure we had something about what, you know, are you going to let him take you home? Oh, I'm going to let him do more than that, but get a few more gins and all this kind of stuff.
And then we
just thought, oh, no, we're going to have to pull it back for here. But yeah, that episode, I mean, we spent. Can you remember that day? It was like the longest day ever.
Yeah. With the party going on.
Yeah.
The Melanie 21st, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a long day. And hot. How? Have the others mentioned about how hot it was in that studio?
Everybody.
Yeah.
But do you remember? I don't know if I can say this. It was very early on. And by midday, we were all just dying from heat stroke.
Yeah.
So makeup had got us like mini fans to at least between takes to have them. And I think it was probably the first week of filming and we got to maybe the Wednesday, it might have been the Friday, and Peter Kay visited.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
He got to lunchtime, it got to look, and it was like, get the doors open, yeah. Try and get some air in. We're all going off to have some lunch. And I remember, I was really nervous because I thought, oh my God, it's Peter Kay. But he started chatting to Lisa. I was sort of walking behind him. And he's going, oh, it's hot in here, isn't it? My God, how are you coping with this heat? And she said, oh, no, it's been terrible. But anyway, they've got us mini fans. And he said, what, little people following you around telling you how great you are?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got like, yeah, little mini fans. We've got little like, yeah. Fans. That was before Warwick Davis made it big, wasn't it? He was just following people around going, you're great in this. You really win.
got us all mini fans.
Yeah. No, it was the heat was, I mean, it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it
so,
does.
You know.
Do you remember Dad with his thermals on, though? Do you remember Dad with thermals under his clothes on? We'd be like, are you mad? And he'd go, no, you're the mad ones. If you get decent thermals, silk thermals, it will keep the heat out.
Yeah.
It will maintain your body temperature. And we're just like, you, and he did, he used to have thermals on.
Oh, no, yeah, he used to have thermals on. Dad was the, Gaff was the sort of director of photography. So he was kind of responsible for the look of it. So he was responsible for, it was him that was had all the lighting in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And we'd be like.
As well as inside, wasn't it?
Yeah. But he'd be like, he'd be sat there in his cam behind his camera, cool as a cucumber, and everyone like sweating cobs. And he'd be, well, I've got these thermals on, you see, and they keep the heat out. And you're like, what? I'm sure. I don't know. I think. I don't think he did. I think he did. I think he had an ice pack down his back. I think it was just conning us lot.
Do you remember other thing? It used to wind makeup and costume up a treat because Daff basically said, "I want you all wearing black. I want all the crew and makeup. Anybody who's sitting outside of the set while we're filming, I need you in black clothing." Yeah. And they'd be like, "What?" Because he said if somebody was wearing a bright colour, it affected the overall look of it.
Yeah,
and
they were lighting.
Like, this is ridiculous. But it's not. The man's a genius. Yeah. And I swear, you can stop, you can pause any episode at any point and it's like a still. It's like a beautifully crafted still. I mean, it's just, his work is stunning.
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, yeah, absolutely brilliant on that. I mean, you know, more people watching it, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because I don't know. Well, some people will say, some people that are into film will say, oh, it looks great. But really, it's a kind of subliminal thing. It always looks warm and inviting. And when you're watching it, obviously, you're laughing, you're following the story, but you're feeling that sort of coziness about it, that warmth about it, that people always say, I mean, when we did the live shows, they were, you know, it's the first time really you get to meet a lot of people who are big fans of it, although obviously, you know, met people. But they are always, oh, it's just great. You know, when we saw the set, you could feel the warmth in the theatres, couldn't you, Cookie? You could feel the sort of affection for it all. So the look of it really suited the kind of the underlying thing that we were trying to get across. You know, I've said before, there are some programs, but you know, things a bit like Shameless, really, I suppose, where I'm sure that kind of world exists where it's people are ripping each other off and being quite harsh to each other. But in my experience of working class people, that isn't the overriding thing. So that's why, you know, I think people looking at it from the outside about a pub in the north would have had this preconception, oh, it's one of those kind of, it's a bit grim up north things. But it was anything but that.
Anything but. And that's what's so sad, I think, now, the amount of boozers that are closing week on week.
Yeah.
But they really were. And I think that's kind of the essence of Early Doors and the Grapes is, you know, the boozers were a real kind of hub of the community where people could just, you know, dip in, dip out. There was a security to it. You'd see those people who'd sit and have a natter. You know, where do we have that now?
No, we don't. And you know, the other thing is I always think about it, which is something which is it's so sad, is that, like in Early Doors, you see there's lots of generations of various people with different, so, you know, that have seen more, or there's, you know, there was like, you know, there was the Melanie and Liam, and then there was you and me, and going round to Tommy, and in the pubs you would find there's a commonality between those people. And I think there's like, I mean, luckily, touch wood, the pub I still go into now, I mean, I sit with, there is me and my mate, and there's a couple of old guys in their 80s there, and we sit, and they're right Tories, really, but the working class, they don't really know why the Tories, really, but even so, they're lovely people, they're really, and we have banter with them and all that. And I think that these days it seems, particularly, you know, I don't, you know, sound like an old fart, but is people just stick with people of their generation. So you don't really get an opinion. You don't realise how much you have in common with people that are older or younger with you. And therefore, maybe do you respect them as much? Probably not, I don't think.
It just kind of made me think about when I was a kid and we had the Whitweek walks in Manchester. And that was usually the time. There may be a couple of other occasions in the year, but it was usually Whitweek. And there'd be, I have such a memory of me and my two younger sisters being got ready for Whit Week. You get new clothes. And then we'd go into Manchester and we'd watch the walks. And then on the way out of Manchester, we'd go to my dad's boozer, which I cannot tell you how much it's like the grapes. It was it's not there now. It was called the Star. That was his boozer near Gorton.
Right.
And I remember walking on the set the first day, and it was like, I'm in my dad's pub.
Yeah.
With the kind of faux leather seats and the, you know, slightly scuzzy tiled floor and the tin ashtrays on the table and all of that little pub top tables. And we'd got me and my mum and my two sisters, we'd go through the door. There was two doors, and my dad would say, right, you go in the room, and he'd go, hey, you three, keep it buttoned. Shh. And we'd go in there, and then what would come through, the bottles of lemonade with a straw in and a bag of crisps each.
Yeah.
Like, now, you know, you keep quiet. And there'd be loads of other women in there of all ages, varying ages, other kids.
Yeah.
You did have to, every now and again, you'd start playing or mucking about or whatever, and then it'd be like, hey, we'll get chucked out, behave yourself, get your feet off the sink, all of that. And it was a kind of... It was a learning ground for respecting your elders, for looking for understanding different generations.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all of it was right, but it was a kind of, and just that sitting and listening to conversation, and, you know, and then my mum and dad would say, oh, she's such a body, or da da da, sorry for her. And it'd go on afterwards when you'd come home, you know, my mum and dad would be talking about, oh, such and such a body, or, oh, you'll never guess what's happened to, because my dad would be in round at the bar with the blokes, you know, invariably you were separate.
Yeah, separated. Yeah, yeah.
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 But I mean, for years we used to do that. And occasionally my dad had, I don't know, he was an electrician for a while, but so he'd like, oh, I've got to go and pick such a thing up off. And he'd say to me and Andrea and Paula, oh, do you want to come with us? And we'd be like, oh, yeah. And we'd get in the car, or it was like a little van he had.
Yeah.
And then, but we wouldn't go in. If it was of an evening, like 6 o'clock, Early Doors,
he'd
say, you can't come in. You'll have to stay. And we'd stay in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Come out with the lemonade and the crisps.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the whole thing. I mean, obviously that was, we loved the, because everybody, so many people recognise that thing of pulling up in the car park. I mean, because obviously it happened to us, me and Craig, you know, but so many people have just, right, you have to stay in the car, you know, I'll get you a Coke and a bag of crisps, and that would be it, and you'd be just sat outside, you know. And but I love all that, you better not be smoking the dimps in the ashtray again and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, but what I think about it, and it's... and. I suppose Early Doors is nostalgic, really, but it's not for the greater good. I think it's just because I think that the pub was just, it's just, I guess that's why people like EastEnders and Coronation Street. I guess there is that sense of community that I guess we don't have as much now, or we hardly have at all.
I don't think we do. It's very rare that, you know, there's the pub round the corner from me. And I bet if I go in there 3-4 times a year, and it's a nice little boozer. It's, you know, the same people have been running it for years, but I don't know, somehow I think COVID has really kind of put the nail in the coffin where boozers are concerned.
Yeah.
And once it is that thing of once you get out the habit of it, it's really hard to reintroduce that. But the times that every now and again I'll say to the lads, oh, we'll go to the pub and we'll have our tea there, because, you know, it puts food on.
Yeah.
And when we're in there, I think, Jesus, why don't I do this more often?
It's fantastic. Well,
or you go to the bar to get another drink and you just get chatting with someone.
Yeah. Well, you'd be pleased to know, Cookie, that I'm keeping the dream alive. I'm in the pub. But I swear to God, at the pub opposite me, well, I'll be in there tonight. I'm back like I was. I mean, I walk in there. All right, Phil. All right, Tony. How you? It's like that.
And you don't go in with a Fred Bentoff pie, though, do you?
Please, I don't tell me about. No, no, no. Do you know what? No. The weird thing about that is that still, even now, people. I went to the pantomime and somebody bought me a Fred Bentoff pie, and I haven't got the heart to tell them that I don't eat meat. And I haven't eaten meat for like 20, 30 years. So when we were doing, like when we did the Lowry, I remember people would bring a Fray Bentos pie for me to sign and one for me to take away and have to eat. When I was like, you know, I'm giving them my mum and daddy. Oh, not another bloody Fray Bentos pie. Yeah, mum, sorry. Yeah, you got Fray Bentos pie for your tea.
I remember my mum getting Fray Bentos pie and, you know, we'd have it, I don't know, maybe once a week. And now she divvied it up between six of us. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah.
Mashed potato.
Oh no. You have to fill it out. Fray Bentos pie. We used to have it, cut it into four and then fill it, put a load of mashed potato on, and then it fills you up a bit.
Yeah, load of mash, load of cabbage, peas, whatever. And and it'd be like, I can't eat any more of this mash, and she'd go, get it out, because there's nothing else.
Yeah.
Just because I know we're talking for ages here, aren't we? Well, that's good.
It's good because
it's not a hardship, is it?
No, not really. What about when did you find about the live show? Did we? I can't remember how. Did we? You know, me and Craig were writing it for like 6 months before we told anybody because we.
Yeah. I don't know if I got talking to Lisa. I don't know if Lisa mentioned it to me now. I can't remember, or whether Craig got in touch with me. I can't honestly remember. I just remember being delighted, utterly delighted.
I think we said, because we started writing it, because obviously over the years had passed, early on, I think we talked about doing a live show and it never happened and all that. And, you know, a lot of time had gone by, which is obviously why, you know, we only booked the 500 seats at the Lowry, thinking, well, because you don't know, even because not many people have ever come up to me. Well, they'll start now when they listen just for the hell of it, but come up to me and say, oh, that program you're doing, that's crap. Or, you know, people will come up to me and say, oh, you know, it's really like this, but, you know, a lot of people don't know anything about it. So we were like, oh, well, the people who like it really like it, but I'm not sure how popular it is.
Yeah.
Which is why when we booked the Lowry, the 500 seater, we're thinking, well, we'll see how it goes. And then, of course, it just went ballistic, didn't it?
Do you remember us, though, the first night standing in the wings? And you were both on stage such a lot. But if there was ever a moment where you weren't on stage, the two of you were always in the wings, just listening to the dialogue, listening to the audience, fine-tuning all the time. But I remember the first night all standing in the wings, waiting for the intro, the music started and the traffic lights, and the audience just went. And we were all looking at each other like, oh my God. You know, because none of us knew whether it was going to work, whether it was going to be able to make that leap from television onto stage. Was it going to work? And oh my God, did it? But just, I mean, every night I wasn't on, obviously in the first half, I wasn't on stage very much, but I'd come up with everybody and I'd sit on one of the trunks and just listen to it. It was so beautiful to just sit and listen to the dialogue and listen to the warmth of the audience, the reaction.
It was brilliant. I mean, I remember It's like, you know, I used to watch American sitcoms, and you know, when an actor comes on and the audience go mad, and I'd be thinking, yeah, nobody does that. Bloody American act. Nobody does that. But then,
but they did.
When they did a live show, every time someone came on, like I remember that one you're talking about, and being really shocked that them, you know, going mad. And then as soon as Ken gives it, there's a bright, he just starts singing. The audience like giving it all that and applauding and going mad because he'd come on stage. It was just really bizarre.
It always sounds like a bit of a cliche, doesn't it? And it sounds like you've been a bit lovey darling, but it really wasn't. What we could feel in the wings and when you were on stage was absolute love and warmth for that show. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't just, oh, come on, entertain us, make us laugh again. Yeah. It was a genuine two-way street of, they just loved it.
Do you know what? I find it, I mean, I have to get my little dig at the BBC, and I always do. But what I, because, although I've got a new sitcom in with them, so I've got to better be careful, haven't I?
Yeah, you better
But that was the thing that I found really, I could never work out how they couldn't, particularly when we were trying to get it commissioned and we couldn't get it commissioned, how they couldn't see the affection. In fact, not even just that they couldn't see it, they had the opposite idea. I mean, I'm sure I told you this story, and I've told it before, is when, you know, we were in a meeting, they said, why don't these people like each other? And we were like, what? Yeah, said, because they're always taking the piss out of each other and, you know, having a little pop at each other and this, that and the other. And we're like, but that's what they're doing. That's the affection. That's, you know, and it was like, and it's funny because the you know, I don't want to, it's not like a class thing, but, you know, the majority, you don't have to be working class to enjoy it. I mean, it helps, I suppose, but, you know, you can be of any class to enjoy it and see the affection that each they've got for each other. And this is why, I mean, I found it bizarre that, you know.
Just not getting it. Just,
yeah.
That must have been quite scary, really.
Oh, yeah, it was for
me. That it's like, you don't get it, do you? You literally do not get it.
Well, we got turned down by everybody, as you know. I mean, you know, BBC Two, BBC One, ITV, Channel Four, Sky. It just, you know, we were like, what are we doing wrong here? You know, but strange that we're still talking about it now, 20 years after, and yet it, the popularity of it grows and grows and grows. I get, you know, younger people now whose parents have said, oh yeah, watch this, and they're all loving it.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic from that point of view. What do your kids think of it now they're older?
I can't remember the last time when they watched it, but they just, it's part of them. It's very much part of them. Rory will quite often, you know, if he goes out for a drink with his mates, and quite often somebody, you know, if he gets talking, or, so, you know, he gets raised on a fairly regular basis. Or, you know, he'll come back and say, oh, such a body, loved you in Early Doors. Will you do him a signed picture? And, you know, nice. And I say, no, tell him to get stuff now.
Yeah, yeah, of course you would, why don't you? Unless you want to pay 10, 20 quid, then tell him no.
At least.
Yeah, at least.
No, so that genuinely there is, you know, and like, my youngest son, he's been working part-time at the co-op, and then there's members of the staff there that, and he always keeps it really quiet about what I do for a living. He gets very embarrassed about it. But eventually, there's certain people in the shop that have got to know what Dan's mum does for a living, and you know, and then they have a look at what you've done.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're like, oh, my God, your mum was in Early Doors.
Yeah.
I used to love that. So it's... You know, from them being so little.
Yeah.
Dan was really little, because he's 22 in a couple of weeks. So he was really little.
Rory was, how old, because remember, because Rory came to the set a couple of times, didn't he? How old is he now?
Rory would have been about 8.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just a part of their life. They don't, you know, they're never kind of fazed by it or see it as anything like, you know, they're not darling lovies. They couldn't be further from the industry. Then neither of them want to go into the industry.
Yeah, my girls are the same.
But equally, it's just part of their life.
Yeah. My favourite one, I'm not sure I've said this, is my youngest, Liv, who's 22, she's kind of all right. She thinks it's all a bit of fun and she's quite, you know, but my eldest, Ella, who's 31 now.
No.
She's never, yeah.
Young, what are you talking about?
I know, yeah. Well, she's never been into it at all, any of it. She's getting back. And when she was at school, I remember at school, I found out, I went to a parents' evening and the guy said, it is him, one of the teachers. It is him, right? And I said, what you, and I give it, hiya. And I must have been honest, I did feel sorry for Ella because he was like, oh, I love early doors. Yeah, you know, yeah. I call it the idiot's lantern because I hate television. But, you know, it was a Latin teacher. She went, you know, she was a clever kid, but I don't know where she got that from. But and I said, but that's the only thing that I'll watch on TV. Absolutely fantastic. And I, you know, always history. And I was like, oh, how's she doing? Oh, you know, it's great. And he wouldn't, you know, it was parents even, and he wasn't really talking about Ella that much. And it turns out, so I said to Ella, what was he, you know, how come he was so surprised? She said, well, lots of people ask, and I just tell him, no, I'm not related to him. I don't know him at all. She said, why do you do that? She said, well, I've only ever done that once, and everybody just keep, and they were just mithering me, so I just don't tell them now. It's like, all right, fair enough then.
But, yeah. And you know, it's like really intelligent bloke. But for me, it's Shakespearean. The quality of the writing is Shakespearean. It is, because you've got everything in there. That's, I mean, I've done Shakespeare once. I did Romeo and Juliet at West Yorkshire Playhouse a few years ago, and I was bricking it because I've never done Shakespeare. And Mal did, he did loads of Shakespeare. And whenever he got cast in whatever, I'd be like, I just don't know. How can you learn that? I mean, how do you learn it? Yeah. And he used to say to me, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised at how easy it is to learn. And then when I got cast as the nurse in Romeo and Juliet. And once I did like my little translations, everything's on the page. There's no fat. There's absolutely no fat. It's just quality lean meat.
Mm.
And everything is there. It's all there for you as the actor, how you then portray it. But it's all there for you. And in many ways, the quality of the writing in Early Doors, and again, I think this is why it reaches so many people and people want to watch it time and time again, just like with Shakespeare, is that you keep this, there's such a resonance, all the different emotions. Depending on where you are in your life, you know, you might not have watched it for a year and then you watch it again and stuff's gone on in your life and different things will ping out at you because it's all there.
Yeah.
There's kind of emotion. You know, you do that brilliant thing of like the comedy and the tragedy, you know, crying and laughing are the same emotions. They're the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And the way in the writing, you will have people laughing their heads off and in the next moment, your heart's broken. I mean, all that stuff with Eddie with the money. I remember when we filmed that, and it just took forever because if you remember originally, Eddie went to every single table and did a personal thank you. And I remember when he came over to us, when he came over to me and Lisa.
Yeah.
And I'm like looking at my. I mean, he was just amazing.
Was brilliant. Just,
I remember when he did his little bit to us, and I was just breaking my heart crying because I'm looking at this guy who's just couldn't have been more grateful. And then, of course, all of that got cut. We couldn't. There was so much that we couldn't use.
Yeah.
And I remember there was something that I did one time at the bar. It was when we were talking about smoking and smoking being bad for you, and Joan's talking about a relative of hers who. A pint in one hand and a ciggy in the other.
Yeah,
and,
a granddad or something. Yeah.
And then, he died when he was there. And I had to say to her, I remember it being, we did the scene from various angles and then it was my shot. And I had to say to her, how old was he, Joan? And she goes, he was 32 when he died or something like that. And I did this thing where I sort of took it in like, oh, and then I had a drag on a fag.
Yeah.
And I remember Craig saying, he said the timing was impeccable. He said, but it was just too near the knuckle. We just got in. And it was all little moments like that. But getting back to the Shakespeare thing, I remember Craig saying all the stuff around the tables that that Mark did. He said, we've had to cut it down to da-da-da. And I was like, you can't. You have to put all of that in because it was so poignant. And he said, yeah, but you have to remember, Cookie, once we've had the credits at the top and the credits at the end, we've got something like 23 minutes.
Yeah.
That's all you've got.
Yeah.
I remember at that point thinking, no, because every episode to me feels like it goes on forever.
Yeah.
There's so much in there.
Well, that's it. It's like, you know, we would, I mean, I love the editing process, to be honest with you, in the writing as well, because I like going back and getting a bit rough with the script and giving it right. That's good. That's a bit fluffy, really. Let's do that. So that when you actually get the script, hopefully there's not a lot of fat in it so that you can, but even then, we get to the editing process, the actual editing process. I remember the very last episode that when we did the part Melanie's 21st, we couldn't get it down to half an hour. We did, obviously, because you got to.
Everything was so brilliant.
There was loads of stuff with the DJ stuff and all that we lost with Craig's on and all that, someone putting beer in his on, and there was all, I know we had elements of it, but there was loads of stuff that we had to cut out.
There was loads and loads. You could have easily done an hour's episode on that the last episode, which is a real shame we didn't.
Well, thank you very much, Susan. Thank you very much, Phil, as ever.
Thanks, Cookie. You're brilliant, aren't you? I don't care what other people say about you. I think you're great.
I've absolutely loved it.
Great. Well, like, I'm looking forward to editing it, to be honest. It's always fun to listen back. And I hope everyone who's listened to this has enjoyed it. Remember to tell your friends, like, subscribe. And hopefully, Susan, we'll see you on this again very soon.
Oh, anytime, Ben. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.